Hey, everybody. Welcome to another podcast. I'm really excited about this episode because we have an awesome guest, Gary Galuski. Is that how you say your last name?
Galuski. Yeah, that's fine.
Gary Galuski's here, and we know each other very well. I didn't know how to say his last name. I always see it in print, but I never pronounce it. But anyway, Gary's a great friend, and I'm excited to talk some old school Detroit rock and roll with him because he's from the D. He's seen Led Zeppelin 3 times.
Yep.
He saw the Doors in 68.
Yep.
He's going to bring you a little Detroit rock and roll history to the show. But first, let me, our sponsors, Gary, sponsors.
Oh, good.
Gary's the, at the old radio station, we had, Gary was one of the account executives.
Yep.
So that's how we got to know each other. And I'll get into it in just a second. World Truck and Auto Body, everyone, in Traverse City, located right behind Classic Motorsports, right off of US 31 between the Chum's Corners and the Mall. They've been in business for 26 years here in this town, so you don't get away with that unless you're great at what you do. That's what they do. They're auto body and collision repair for any size vehicles, commercial vehicles, semis, RVs. I've seen 18-wheelers in these huge bays, but they also do regular cars, trucks, SUVs. They do it all over there, and again, 26 years of experience. Go see Jeff and Bob over there. They're sandblasting specialists. They're one of the only few games in town, and they really specialize in sandblasting. Have anything metal sandblasted and painted or just sandblasted ready for custom paint. They also do custom door work for garage doors and entryways to custom homes. Free estimates, no obligation. Call them over there. 231-943-9945. Call or stop by World Truck and Auto Body, located right behind Classic Motorsports off of US 31 between the Chum's Corner and the Mall. Tell them you heard about it on the podcast. I'd really appreciate that. Also, if you shop online, do you shop online, Gary?
All the time.
Amazon?
All the time.
Amazon, if you go to my website first and then you click the banner,
yeah,
I get a little kickback on the dollar amount that you spend.
Start doing that now.
All right, thank you, because I get I reinvested into the podcast. Like, I got to get another microphone. Behind me, I'm going to put a little shelf, like kind of another mic 3 and 4 over there.
Okay.
Because right now when I have 3 and 4 microphones, you got to hold it and stand in the back of the room. I had that with Kevin B. Klein last week. Yeah. But let's talk about some Detroit-based rock and roll from back in the day that you got to experience firsthand, Gary.
I was fortunate. Couple things. One, I was the right age, and two, it was the right time. So all the stars lined up, and I got to see some people that they were right in their heyday.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, let's start with around about 1965 or so, there was a music store. I grew up in West Dearborn, and there was a music store called Artist Music. When bands would come to town, this was the place. I know Pete Townsend from The Who would come in there and get a guitar that he would smash up.
Wow.
Because they had to get something that was kind of cheap.
Right.
But preserve the image of destroying the equipment on stage.
Of course. Of course. So what's the name of that place?
It was called Artists Music.
Okay.
And on more than one occasion, they would have a whole weekend dedicated to Battle of the Bands on one side of it was like two stores side by side, and one of them was the entire width of a stage. So there were like 10 or 12 bands that would compete for Battle of the Bands. And so we got to see a bunch of local people. Nobody I could name by name.
Could that guitar shop have been preserved and maybe open to this day? Because I know Jimmy Buffett he was looking forward to going to Detroit so we could go to this historic guitar shop. And he bought an awesome old guitar there. And I don't know if that's the one. There's like a famous guitar shop down there.
I'm guessing that's Elderly Instruments in Lansing.
Maybe.
Yeah. That place is famous.
Right.
And I want, for an old job that I had, I wound up going there once. And even though I don't play anything, I had to wear the lobster bib to keep from drooling all over myself. The place had so much cool stuff.
Now, you're a non-musician, right, Gary?
I don't play a thing. Nothing.
But you are the most, like, one of the most intense music fans that I know. And I love that because I'm a huge music fan, too.
Yes,
you are. I don't have the very much knowledge about those days because it's before my time. You know, I love the late 70s rock and roll. Like, could you, like, if I could come back and be a concert goer in 1978, I think for me, that was like the prime, because there was Led Zeppelin was full up and running. I mean, they did the whole 70s and they started in 68 or whatever. But, you know, there was Lynyrd Skynyrd, there was Aerosmith in their heyday.
Yep.
There was Ted Nugent in his heyday, the Cat Scratch Fever, Double Live Gonzo. There was, you know, I mean, Van Halen just came out in 1978 with their debut album.
Yep.
I mean, that was, you know, there was Molly Hatchet was, you know, a national touring Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy.
My God. People love Thin Lizzy and they hate the two songs that radio plays.
And but you know what? You know the song Whiskey in a Jar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever heard the Thin Lizzy version?
No, I haven't.
He wrote it. It's his song.
That. You know what? We always play the Metallica version of Whiskey in a Jar, and it only happens every St. Patrick's Day.
Well, find the Thin Lizzy one. It's real cool.
I'm going to find it right now.
All right.
Gary brought a bunch of great music, and we have it all loaded up and ready to go, but we're going to play a little Thin Lizzy. What song?
Whiskey in a Jar.
Okay.
Now, while you're doing that, I'll talk a little bit about how Detroit was in the very beginning. Everybody knows Bob Seger. If you don't, you've been under a rock for the
last... Everybody knows Bob Seger. You got that
for
right.
For 50 years.
And when did it happen? Please incorporate when Motown... did rock and roll happen?
All right. There were two AM radio stations right when the Beatles came over in 64. There were two AM radio stations. One was out of Windsor, Ontario. It was called CKLW. In fact, I think it still exists.
Wow. CKLW.
Yep. Yeah, the Big Eight. CKLW broadcasting.
The Big Eight.
50,000 watts of power, which interestingly, if you came up north here in the summer at night, you could get the Big Eight because of the way the signal would bounce off the clouds and whatnot.
Sure.
You could get that and you could get WLS out of Chicago.
Yeah.
Because we could hear both
of those. I think you still can.
Yeah, but it's just the way...
At night.
At night. Off the clouds.
Right.
You know, the whole bit.
I listened to WBZ in Boston from here.
There you go.
When I got in my truck and I was going to the morning show, I would listen to WBZ, and I was like, wow.
So
some of those AMs that were, you know, kind of grandfathered in where they didn't have to... bring their signal down at night.
No, yeah, and you're right.
They would, and as long as there wasn't, you know, WLS and what's the one in Detroit? JR?
WJR.
Yeah, 950. That's another flamethrower.
Yeah, it is. It's a powerhouse for old people, and I'm an old people, and I don't even listen to them. But that's a whole other story.
They had a DJ that I guess all these AM stations used to be top 40 at one point in the late 60s. Is that what you're referring to with the
CKLW?
CKLW.
CK. Everybody calls it CK.
CK.
That's it. Okay. The other one was Keener 13, WKNR. It was more Motown on CK. More British Invasion on Keener 13. So British Invasion happens. It's got the Beatles, the Stones, the Animals, the Zombies. Let's see. Herman's Hermits, Jerry and the Pacemakers. You name it. They played them. And what
British
was
Invasion.
Yeah, but the cool
64.
Thing about 64, 65, around about 66, the Monkees start coming in.
And this is AM top 40.
You bet. That's exactly what it is. Now, the thing about the way the programming happened was you could hear the Beatles next to Dean Martin, next to Bernd Kampfert and his orchestra, some German guy, next to Simon and Garfunkel, next to Petula Clark, next, and it was variety. The way we listen to radio now,
I love
there's
it.
A format.
Yeah.
You know, you pick any station and it's kind of, it's chocolate ice cream followed by chocolate ice cream followed by a little bit more chocolate ice cream and a little bit more. Or vanilla. Take your pick. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
But there, it was Neapolitan. I mean, you got it all. And when you're a little kid in the car with your parents, you hate half of it, but they're okay. You love the other part and they're miserable. So everybody got a little bit of what they wanted, but they also had to suffer through what the other person wanted.
Of course, of course.
Now, Motown was huge. I mean, growing up where I did, Motown was huge. You heard the Four Tops, you heard the Temptations, the Miracles, the Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Tammy Terrell.
Awesome.
All, and there were some really good acts.
Hitsville.
Oh, you got it. Hitsville, USA. It was the place. You hailed from Detroit. You were proud of that legacy.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I'm not even from Detroit, and I'm proud to live in Michigan. That's part of the allure. And at the same time, there was a Philadelphia soul music going on.
Blue-Eyed Soul. That's where Hall & Oates hailed from.
Yep, yep,
yep.
That's what Hall & Oates, that's how I know it.
Yep. Todd Rundgren's another one, believe it or not. Todd Rundgren has that whole, if you get into some of his records, you'll hear some of that.
So that's going on in the mid-60s, and when FM radio started, and there was it was underground.
68.
AM stations were required to have an emergency broadcast system, and a lot of that was FM.
Yep.
And so to keep the signal going, they would put their hippie cousin or nephew on the air, the guy that was stoned and didn't have a job. Well, he's got a lot of records. He could play FM DJ, and it was like real, you know, the early days of Alice Cooper.
And I got a DeVito.
The King Crimson.
Yep.
I've got the Thin Lizzy ready. Do you want to hear that?
Yeah, sure. Let it go.
All right. I hope there's no ad. Oh, of course.
Yeah, we always get the ad.
All right. Here we go. Is this not the studio version that you know?
No, I know the studio, but this sounds pretty close to it.
Nice. I wonder what year this looks like. Early 70s.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
They wrote this.
Yeah. Phil Lynott.
Pretty progressive that they had a black lead singer for Thin Lizzy. A lot of people, I didn't know that until 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about...
not that it matters, but that's pretty progressive.
Well, I don't know if they were from England or Ireland. I'm not sure, but when you go over there, and I've been there, you'll see, the stigma that we have when you'll see, like... racially mixed couple.
Yeah.
Over there, it's normal.
Oh, right.
So for them to have a mixed band is as normal as, like, you know, anything.
It definitely has that psychedelic.
And I'm pretty sure the guy on guitar is a guy by the name of Gary Moore, although I don't know a lot about him. And it was a pretty penny.
You know, when you talk about influence, like, I'm so interested that, you know, maybe I heard this song from Metallica first,
right?
You know, because of my age.
Sure.
And then to think that this is the original, like, I'm so interested in that. Like, when I grew up being a Ted Nugent guitarist, you know, as a guitarist and a songwriter, I was obsessed with Ted Nugent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe we'll get into that, you know, because the Amboy Dukes came from that era, which you were very much a part of. But, you know, when I heard that he was influenced by Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah.
I went back and listened to Chuck Berry, and I could hear it. I love to go back, because that's what was my only option at first, was to, you know, take the current artist or whoever I was into. And then in interviews, because I would read and listen to anything that they were involved with. And then when they talked about their influences, that allowed me to go back, you know, such as... You know, you would listen to, like, let's say, you know, Eddie Van Halen said he was in, you know, Eric Clapton.
Eric Clapton.
And the Yardbirds. And, you know, before that, it was, you know, and who was, and then you go back even further, Chuck Berry was influenced by Les Paul, and before that, Robert Johnson.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, wow, now we're back in the 30s.
There's a lineage. All these, the only ones to break the rule are the rap artists.
Right.
They're the only ones. But everybody else, all you got to do is look in the rearview mirror, and you see where it came from.
And you can feel the purity of the instruments and the songwriting and the...
I heard an interview with Eddie Van Halen on the radio when I lived downstate. This had to be 25 years ago.
And Mark Farner is a big influence for Eddie Van Halen.
Okay. I didn't know
When I spoke to Mark Farner, he was like, Eddie Van Halen came up to me like a little kid.
Makes sense.
You know?
Yeah. Well, get this. On the interview, Eddie had his guitar with him, and the interviewer asked him, he said, I understand that you know how to play Crossroads the way Cream did it. He picks up the guitar and nailed it note for note. It was like perfect. And I couldn't tell it wasn't Clapton. And this had to be like 15, 20 years apart.
There's a Cream song called Politician.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one that Van Halen, when Sammy Hagar was with them, that they used to do at dress rehearsals.
Okay.
You know?
Great tune.
And for me, you know, Cream was before my time, but I was right up in Van Halen.
Well.
So it's just, you know, and that's what the idea behind this podcast is that we're going to go back.
Yep.
We're going to go back. And in Detroit-based rock and roll. Now, was I moving too fast forward when I talked about the surgence of FM, and that was
it all played together.
Underground.
It all played together. Here's what wound up happening. Bob Seger was on AM. Okay, he was like the precursor to a whole bunch of the other ones. So there's a couple songs we're gonna play that Bob had on AM radio, and great tunes. One's called East Side Story. It was his first hit, at least in the Detroit area. And then it was followed by another one called Persecution Smith, which if you find the lyrics and probably Google it, it's a protest song. It's Bob Seger did a protest song.
Like Two Plus Two, right?
That was another one, yeah. Very much
I thought it was The System before it was Bob Seger, but you're saying that it was Bob Seger.
And The Last Heard.
And The Last Heard.
And then there was the Bob Seger. Well, I don't know if the running order, but the Bob Seger System was in there. And there was another name that they had as well.
This is before Ramblin' Gamblin' Man, which came out in 68 that Glenn Frey was backup vocals on, right?
Right, right. Because there was the two I mentioned. There was, oh boy.
Do you want to play East Side Story?
Yeah.
Should we play Prosecution?
No, play East Side. That's... I play this for my wife, who's a huge Bob Seger fan, and I go, who is this? And she goes, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah. Like Bubba Bush, gazed into the eyes of love. Bathed in the dirty neon light, she begging, don't go out tonight. If we work out somehow, maybe we can find a way out, baby. And he laughed and said, I got to go. And she cried. This is Bob Seger.
Bob Seger on vocal. Young, I promise I won't hurt no one. Oh, baby, when you gonna learn? Them folks uptown got bread to burn. When they see me flash my knife, they'll be fearing for their life. They won't give me trouble. It sounds like Gloria.
Yes, very much so. And you can hear that little organ that they used to have called the Farfisa, which was almost like a kiddie toy.
That's that classic 60s, 70s rock sound, man. The psychedelic era.
And everybody loved that sound.
Whoa, man.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of drugs were going on? I mean, was this, everybody on psychedelic? Was it acid?
Not yet, but...
Or was it innocent enough that there was nothing going on?
I'm guessing this was... I have a facility for dates, and I can't even remember. I think this was about 65, 66.
Beatnik era? Past that.
They had mods. It was a pre-hippie. They were called mods.
Yeah.
And it was over in England. You didn't even quite have bell bottoms
yet. The bowl haircut, the longer hair, but it was still above the collar.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, if you had that hair in school, right, you got sent home.
The Animals, yeah. Eric Burdon.
Yeah, exactly.
The Beatles.
Yep.
The Beatles were considered to have long hair.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, even those mop tops, that was long hair. But, I mean, if you weren't high and tight.
You were out of school.
Yeah. And parents were afraid of this, right?
Oh, they beat you like a drum. There was no long hair for us in school. It was awful. We wanted it, and they didn't want it.
Even to the extent of, Disney World and stuff would kick people out for having long hair.
You know who the best one they kicked out? The Bee Gees.
No kidding.
They wouldn't let the Bee Gees in because their hair was too long.
You know, I don't know the Bee Gees beyond Saturday Night Fever. I didn't know if they were, you know, I have no...
Well, before it, they actually had some good songs.
No kidding.
But then they got lured by the whole...
The disco.
The disco and the money.
Which they made a lot of money, man. Yeah, Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. I mean, I know it well.
And who didn't see that movie?
Nobody. Everybody
saw it. Yeah, we all went.
Of course.
And it wasn't video.
Was that against the rock and roll attitude at the time? Because I remember there was a disco sucks revolution. It was like disco is the worst. Like,
well,
you know,
it can't
burn the records. Yep. Comiskey Park.
Comiskey Park.
Right.
And it was a DJ that used to be in Detroit by the name of Steve Dahl.
Yep.
And the guy was a scream. He was hilarious. We loved Steve Dahl.
Yeah.
And when he left Detroit to go to Chicago, hearts were broken. We thought he was great. And he was great. But he could also be equally obnoxious. There were days where if Steve and he's
obnoxious Steve, on the radio, I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, I know. I know this has got to be a new dynamic. Steve said on the air one day, he goes, "If I'm in a bad mood, you're going to know it." And it was like,
see, man,
okay.
That's the originals, man. Those are the people that I've later, you know, my radio influences are also a lot. You know, that's why
sure.
I know Steve Dahl. I never got to tune into him, but I did my research. I know how big of a name that is, and
he was huge.
What an impact he made.
And he was good at what he did. And the other guy that went through Detroit on a station called W4 was Howard Stern.
Yep.
And we were listening to Stern back in like 72, 73. But he wasn't what he does now.
Right.
He was playing music.
Yeah.
And he was talking in between the songs, just like all the other guys.
And that's when the format flipped to country. W4 went country.
Hop along, Howie.
He was there at the time. That wasn't just the movie. He did.
It really happened.
Oh, my God.
Now, and then they went, they may have gone back to rock. I can't recall. But there were so many other stations.
Wheels,
98.7 Wheels, WLLZ.
WRIF.
RIF is still up and running to this day. What else? CSX is down there right now. There's a DJ named Karen Savelli. She's bounced from one to the next to the next. She's been around.
Doug Podell.
Podell's been around like
Arthur
forever.
Arthur P.
He retired.
He lives down in Texas or something.
Does he? Yeah. I lost track of where he went, but he was a stalwart. In fact, there was a bumper sticker. They always had their bumper stickers for the radio station, but there was one with this really wild font that said, "Baby," which was what his call line was. And that was, you saw that on bumper stickers. It was the RIF bumper stickers.
Right. I wish it was that easy now.
No, it's way, way harder.
I'm like, when I was learning about him, like Arthur P, yeah, his thing was baby.
It was.
And it's like, well, I wish, just one word, that's what he did?
That was it. And the dude was massively popular, and he was good. I mean, you know what? He dialed into what people wanted to hear.
You know what, at the time, and this was the case for me growing up in Boston, listening to WBCN and stuff, but the DJs were actually friends with your favorite artists. I mean, Mark Pereno hung with Aerosmith.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hung with Jay Giles Band, which is another Detroit, a home away from home sort of band, you know. I think those two markets are kind of similar, Detroit and Boston.
A lot of blue collar.
A lot of the blue collar, a lot of industrial, bad weather, sports towns.
Yep.
You know, and so they shared bands like Bob Seger. Bob Seger, even when I spoke to him on the interview and I said, you know, I know, you know, even growing up in Boston, he's like, Boston's where we have the loudest crowds and stuff. And recorded some live cuts.
He did live stuff from there.
Yep, and the Jay Giles band, and I think the Cars were also represented in Detroit a little bit. Well, the Cars are from Boston.
I knew that.
But Rick Ocasek, and, you know, even Peter Wolfe was on WBCN. He used to do Saturday nights.
Yep.
You know,
wasn't that the Woofer Goofa with the green teeth?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Love it, well, love it.
Wolf, as you know, started as a DJ, and then he got on the stage, and look at what he did there.
Right.
He's amazing. I listened to...
He was influenced by people like the guy that
coined
the term rock and roll out of Cleveland.
Alan Freed.
Thank you.
Yeah. I could swear that he had some Wolfman Jack in his bloodstream, too, because the guy was, you know, he was another legend.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot about him, but you'd see things and you'd go, okay, for me, the DJ is your friend. And in the simplest of terms, I look back, and this is for me now, 1968, 69, 70, there was this obnoxious, curmudgeonly, miserable guy by the name of Dave Dixon. Dixon's my hero. Dixon knew more about music, and he could play you something, anything from current music that was just coming out to bizarre Miles Davis or Ornette Coleman or some of these jazz guys that...
Wow, it was freeform? Was this FM or FM. It was still on the...
This was a station in Detroit called WABX, which was the underground station it launched. In fact, at 10 p.m., when it first started, and this is 68 now... We're listening to all these cool new bands on underground radio.
What year are we talking now?
68.
Okay.
Later part of 68. At 10 p.m., they would switch to blues, and it was all blues all night. So all the underground stuff would go away. They'd cut at 10. Okay. Shortly thereafterward, they just went 24 hours. The other funny thing was if they played something like Enigata De Vita, which we affectionately called the 17-minute belch.
Right.
Because they played it so much, you just got sick of it.
They really did.
Oh, man, it was on all the time. But 17 minutes, think about that. Yeah. They worked in a building downtown Detroit called the David Stott Building. Well, everybody knew the minute they started playing something like that at night, they went up on the roof to burn one.
They went up
to smoke a joint.
Yep, the long song of the night.
And they, you know...
I played, we had a general manager, Charlie Ferguson, you and I both worked under, and one morning... Somebody called in for an instant request, which we used to do from 5:30 to 6.
Yeah.
And said, play in Enigata De Vita. And I said, I'll play it tomorrow, but I'll play it starting at 5:13.
Right.
And that'll bring us to 5:30.
There you go.
And just so happens, Charlie Ferguson was awake. He's like, really? Enigata De Vita? Come on. Are you serious?
Why not?
And I'm like, come on, man. You know. That's another story.
A different era. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he, with his age, has to appreciate
Charlie
that.
Charlie was probably up on the roof somewhere.
Oh, he was.
As a much younger man.
He's also a guy that told me that in the early 70s when he was on the air, they were drinking cases of beer.
Because
the storm would come in, and I think he was in Fargo for a lot of his on-air time. And he said that we would get cases of beer and hunker down at the radio station when everybody, you know, the power was going to go out. Radio is, you know, so powerful during those times.
You back it up.
You know, and he said we used to hunker down all night long. We're drinking at the station.
Yeah.
We're bringing the information, playing all music, of course. But,
well, yeah, that's why I say the DJ is your friend.
That's the spirit, man.
We loved our DJs. I mean, loved them.
Growing up in Boston, and WBCN also started in 1968.
Okay.
And they didn't have any nighttime programming, so what they did is there was a club next door or two doors down. They actually ran a hard wire above the ceiling and into a club where there was live music going on.
Was this the Boston Tea Party by any chance?
I think yes, I think it was.
Okay,
that's amazing. You know that?
Well, that's place is legendary.
They used to hang a microphone in the middle of and play it on the air.
Yeah, yeah,
amazing.
That place.
And there was Janis Joplin going through there.
There was a circuit. That. Everybody knows what the film, well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people know what the Fillmore.
Fillmore East, Fillmore West.
Right. Okay.
The promoter.
Bill Graham.
Bill Graham.
In Chicago, there was a guy by the name of Aaron Russo who had the Aragon Ballroom. In Detroit, there was Russ Gibb with the Granny Ballroom. I don't know the name of the guy, but there was the Boston Tea Party. And there were all these little places that were all catching on to the fact that these kids, and when I say kids, we were all, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, wanted to see these bands that were being brought in. And when you got to see them, all right, the first one I saw at the Granny Ballroom, The Who was the headliner, Pink Floyd was the opening act, and it was $4.50.
You gotta be kidding.
No, it was 1968, and the funny thing was...
And some venues I heard back then were like, they would even play gymnasiums of high schools.
The Who played Southfield High School Gymnasium for a dance. I'm not sure. I think it was a dance.
I heard a lot about
that. It was like
that.
$2.50. That was the first time they played Detroit.
The Who?
The Who. Who you would now pay... What?
Yeah,
a couple hundred bucks more to see. That was $2.50.
Amazing. Even my wife, and she's not anything related to this old, but she saw Whitesnake in her gym.
There you go.
I don't know why. Why did they play venues like that?
Aerosmith used to play in Allen Park, Michigan, at a place called the Yak Arena. They played at. Which is just this little, it's like a hockey rink.
A basketball, right.
Spirit used to play there.
Yeah, like Center Ice here would be.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like $3.
Unbelievable.
It just worked that way.
But was the Fillmore, was it the Fillmore or the Fox that was the theater in Detroit? And the there Fox. Was also the Olympia, which the Beatles played, and that's where Glenn Frey saw the Beatles.
Yep,
and the Stones played there. In 1964.
Yep.
And the Olympia was the original home of the Red Wings, back in the day.
Yep.
And there were, what other venues did they have at the time?
Cobo Hall was the big.
Agora.
No, that's Chicago.
Okay. What did you say? The
Cobo?
No, where you saw Led Zeppelin.
The Grandy.
The Grandy.
The Grandy Ballroom.
That was the place. And there's a great documentary about the Grandy Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
If you get a chance to see it.
It's really good. In fact, they ran it up here at the... State Theater for one of the film festivals. It was Louder Than Love. It's called Louder Than Love.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. We had the documentary maker on the on the radio program.
The guy is cool.
What else should we play here? Let's get a refill and we'll get a little, we'll take a little respite in between.
All right.
Like the old school DJs.
Works for me.
What are we going to play here? Let's play something from that era and then we'll continue the conversation.
All right.
MC5?
Play Motor City's Burning. This is a little gem that, for those of you historians out there that knew about the 68 riots in Detroit.
Of course.
This is the MC5 doing the Motor City's Burning.
Hey!
right, the MC5. Whoa, I got to put the... We were enjoying the music here in the room, and I had to take the speakers out because when you have mics open and you have speakers on, it creates a feedback.
Feedback.
Hey, the MC5 on Omelet Radio. Good stuff, man. Who was the lead singer of this MC5?
Okay. It was a five-piece, which MC was Motor City 5. And a little tidbit. Excellent. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
But it was Rob Tyner on vocals. And also on vocals on the first tune on the Kick Out the Jams album is a guy by the name of Wayne Kramer, who was one of the two guitar players. The other guitarist was Fred Sonic Smith, who married Patti Smith.
No kidding.
So we joked about the fact that her name was then Patti Smith Smith, but that's a whole other deal. There was Michael Davis on bass and Machine Gun Thompson, Dennis Thompson, Dennis Machine Gun Thompson on drums.
And this is all around 68. So you had Bob Seger was around and pretty big, right?
Yeah, he was.
Were they national at this point?
Not even close.
Okay, because the national hit Ramblin' Gamblin' Man did go national.
Okay.
And at the time it was top 40 radio, right?
Right.
Okay, and then also in the Detroit scene you had the Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes emerged in 67, and they immediately had the hit Journey to the Center of the Mind, which was national, right?
They had one before it called Baby Please Don't Go, which is everybody has covered that tune.
Yeah, everybody.
And their version is incredible.
Yes.
It's really
good.
And Ted
later did it again on Double Live Gonzo on the solo tour.
If you listen to that first version, he is lifting riffs in the guitar, in the solo in the middle. There is a riff from Third Stone from the Sun off the first Hendrix album that Ted does, and he does a beautiful job on it. That's just a beautiful song. Okay, so here was a lineup. Again, right age, right time, all that junk. Five bands for $250. Henry Ford Community College in the gym. All right. The first band comes out. They're called the Wilson Mower Pursuit. They were like a big brother in the holding company. They had this chick on vocals named Stoney, four guys and her. Okay. Big brother, Janis Joplin. Next comes a band called the Frost, which we all know had Dick Wagner.
Yes. Who later became a friend of the show.
There you go.
The radio show.
The third band comes out. And now I'm with this friend of mine who's a few years older than me. So he's been seeing all these people at the Granny Ballroom. He went every weekend because he was old enough to go.
Is that how often they played the local Detroit? I mean, it was every
local and national.
It was Bob Seger. It was the MC5. It was the Amboy Dukes.
Well, Five was the house band at the Grandy.
Nope.
That was the house band.
Wow.
Okay. But you had
the Grand Funk.
That came a little bit
71.
Later.
71?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. About 71. But anyway, so we have the Wilson Mower Pursuit. We have the Frost. Then this other band comes out with this wiry little guy. He was weird, right?
The Stooges.
His name was Iggy Stooge.
Yep.
It wasn't Iggy Pop. It was Iggy Stooge.
Yeah.
And they were the Psychedelic Stooges. And
what a time!
It was like, what is this guy doing? He was so cool.
No shirt.
And then comes Bob Seger.
Did he have the no shirt going on from the start?
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
I saw him in another place later for like $2. And the stage was about, I don't know, 6 inches off the floor. And he drugged this poor girl from the audience up on the stage. You could see the terror in her eyes just from what he might do. He would rub glass on his bare chest, peanut butter, you name it, he did it. Anyway.
Where did this stuff come from?
He was dropped on his head as a kid. I don't know.
Was it Jim Morrison influence?
Gotta be.
I mean, who was on stage doing wild things before
Jim
that?
Morrison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so Bob plays, and then came the headliner. And see, here's the thing that unless you grew up there, most people think Bob Seger is the biggest thing to come out of Detroit, which in this day and age is absolutely true. But back then,
as far as longevity goes, and you can only measure that in current day.
Yeah. But back then, the MC5, that was the band, and they headlined. And it was all five of them for $250.
Wow.
It was like,
and when
wow.
the national acts came, like when a Led Zeppelin came through or when the Who came through, there was... not a big deal, or was that an Olympia Stadium? Would they have a national opening band, or would they have some of the local ones?
For about a year or so, it was all at the Granny Ballroom, and tickets were usually between $350, maybe $450, and you bought the ticket at the door.
Yeah.
There was, I mean...
Would they oversell?
Oh,
they'd just pack them in.
You'd be in there with everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah. The promoters were so sleazy back then. I mean, not sleazy, but you know,
they took advantage of a system available to them.
Right. I mean, people these days, yeah. I mean, the last thing to happen was the, you know, the fire with the Great White Show, and it was oversold. There's foam on the walls. I mean, the you know, every concert moving forward is, you know, fire code,
You
know, pyrotechnics, we can't have flammable stuff. So, I mean, every year, every generation, it gets tighter and tighter.
Well,
and we're talking general admission at the time. You're in the door.
There's no seats.
There's no chairs on the floor.
A little bit later, there would be a couple of places that would be old movie theaters converted. Now, in November of 69... I went to one of those. We went to see the opening act, and they were called the Chicago Transit Authority. They had one record out. That was it. And they were playing on the strength of a cover tune called I'm a Man, which Spencer Davis with Stevie Winwood did way back when. But that was their, it was like a 7-minute dragged out drum solo thingy in the middle.
Was it like the Traffic days of?
Traffic was up and running. Yes.
Right. Okay.
But Chicago.
Right.
Did that, but the headliner was a band.
Did they have horns and everything?
Oh, yeah. 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 Like, it was a 7-piece band.
Chicago, like pre 1980, was this awesome rock band.
Well, they had a guitar player named Terry Kath.
Right.
Terry Kath took Chicago in a whole different direction than when Peter Cetera got a hold of the band and turned them into like ballads.
Adult contemporary.
Exactly.
Bands, right?
Yeah. And anyway, so we go to see them, and there's a headliner. We don't know these guys. We don't have their records. None of this. I'm with three friends of mine. And I remember turning to this one buddy of mine, and I said, I think they play woodwinds. Right? Woodwinds. Because to me, when you went to band in school, woodwinds were flute, clarinet.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like
oboe.
That. Oboe. Bassoon.
Sure. Yeah, bassoon.
I think they play woodwinds. So the band is touring behind an album called Stand Up, and the band's called Jethro Tull.
Oh, wow.
We're sitting in the fourth row, unassigned seating. We just went in, sat down in the fourth row. That one was expensive. It was $550.
And Ian Anderson looked like a madman back then,
Oh,
right?
He sure did.
Like, scary dude.
Like, real scary. Like Rasputin the Mad Monk.
I've seen old video of that. And, when did Alice Cooper is from Detroit. I think he went to high school in Arizona, but he also worked the Detroit music scene back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Early 70s.
With Shep Gordon as his manager. And they said they were writing bad checks left and right.
Probably.
They got pulled over by the cops. They were all in the van. They were going to a gig. And they were wanted for bad checks that they were writing all around town.
Sounds right. Yeah.
And Shep Gordon gets back in the van after dealing with the cops. He goes, we're good to go. And he says, how'd you get us out of it? He goes, I wrote him a check. One of the great stories.
I never heard that. That's brilliant. I love it.
I wrote him a check.
Well, they played... if you know the Detroit area, there's an area of a bunch of different cities called the Downriver area, and there's a place called Aquinas High School. Alice Cooper played Aquinas High School.
I heard that.
Yep, I knew people that went to that show. You know, and
so
again,
meanwhile,
radio
was supporting this. Now FM undergrounds, like you said, WABX.
Yep, and WKNR FM.
From Windsor, right?
No, that was the Detroit.
CK
was Windsor. Keener 13, the FM side, it was in Dearborn, of all things.
Right.
On Saturday afternoon, Russ Gibb, who ran the Grandy Ballroom, was a DJ, and he would have guests in, like Pete Townsend. Wow. They're buddies to this day.
Yeah. Mark Parento was on the air. Was that
W4. Later? That was what? W4. That was around, we were into the 70s at that point.
Okay.
He was there for quite a while.
Yeah, Mark Parento is a Boston legend.
And that's where he moved back to.
WBCN.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
But he had tremendous success in those informative.
He was massively popular.
Days.
Yes, he was. He was massively popular.
And what is it, after the emergence of those radio stations and these bands are coming to be? You got MC5, you got Bob Seger, you got the Amboy Dukes, you've got the Stooges, you've got Frigid Alice
Pink
Cooper
came
coming
in
to be.
Later.
You've got the Frost, the Frigid Frost. Pink.
Yep, they House remind, of the Rising Sun.
You turned me on to them. And I went and looked at it, and it was like, boy, they sounded like the Amboy Dukes. I mean, oh, yeah. A lot of bands did back then.
They were buddies.
It was that sound.
You know, they'd all be backstage together, and everybody would be copying from everybody else.
And what about the partying? It always gets maybe overstated about the drug use back then. Was it pot? Was it psychedelics?
Depending on the band.
Did everybody want to go to Woodstock in 69? What was it like around there?
The record store that I used to go to had posters on the wall for Woodstock before it came up.
No kidding.
And
wow.
To look at the poster, you saw just a bunch of really good bands. But the funny thing was, there were names on there that never did materialize. I remember Jeff Beck on that. Jeff Beck didn't play Woodstock, but no. I remember seeing his name on the poster.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you looked at it, and it was three different days, and I remember my friends and I going, well, which day would you go? Which day would you go? You had no idea. If you went,
right.
You were there.
Right.
That was it. You arrived on Friday, and you weren't getting out until it was all said and done.
Did you have any desire to go there?
Oh, in the worst way.
And how old were you in 69?
15.
15.
There was no going.
A little too early.
There was no going.
Yep.
You don't even bother to ask your parents about
that.
No. No. A year later, there was a thing down around Jackson, Michigan called Goose Lake. And some friends of mine did go to that. And there were heavy hitters there. Again, it was The Faces with Rod Stewart.
Wow.
Jethro Tull was there. Mountain was there.
I recently started getting into The Faces days of Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart is a great blues singer. You know, and he was with Ron Wood
and Jeff
The
Beck.
Faces day.
They were both in the Jeff Beck band.
Because when I was growing up in 1985 and 86, it was Some Guys Have All the Luck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he seemed just like a pop artist. But when he teamed up with, you know, what song I really like, and it really stands up to this day, People Get Ready, when he did it with Jeff Beck.
Yep.
Awesome. Yep. And then when I think of those Faces songs, you know, when I listen back to those, it's like it was great rock and roll.
Oh, yeah. The first record he did, it was called the Rod Stewart Album. Plain yellow cover with either white or black lettering later on. And there's a bunch of acoustic songs on there with Rod singing. He's fabulous. And we all knew who he was because he had been in the Jeff Beck group for the first two records that they did.
Wow.
And they played the Grandy. Both a couple of tours through there.
Now, who was first through the Yardbirds? Was it Jimmy Page through the Yardbirds or was it Jeff Beck initially?
Clapton.
Oh,
here was
right.
This is how it worked. In the very beginning, Clapton, for people that know about Clapton, he is a dyed-in-the-wool blues guy. I mean, he's a purist.
Yep.
Okay. So
B.B. King influenced.
Oh, Albert King, B.B. King,
Riding
Howlin'
with the King,
Wolf.
I think is one of his albums,
yep.
Riding with the King.
Yep. No, a few years back. He was a purist. This guy. If I've read books on him, he would sit in his bedroom with the records playing and try to emulate what these guys were doing. Okay.
That's what I loved about the British Invasion. I later found out is that they took American blues rock.
Yes.
You know, American blues.
Absolutely.
And they, you know, they did their interpretation of it. And then it came back to us in the British wave with the Stones and the Who and the Yardbirds and the
Turtles. Oh, the Stones are one of the best blues bands around.
Yeah,
if you listen to the Stones play blues, almost nobody does it better than them anymore. And for guys...
Midnight Rambler.
Oh, that was a huge hit.
It's a long song.
I frown on the word hit. It was in heavy rotation. In
AOR.
Coming
radio.
Up, underground. Still underground. It was
FM underground.
It was coming up to Christmas of 69. If you got the Let It Bleed album for Christmas, You did well. And I got to tell you, it was under my tree. I'm a happy guy to report that. What
well,
a great
all
record.
We need someone we can lean on.
Yep. Okay, so Clapton.
And nationally, these bands were more than gigantic at the time.
They were starting to get some motivation and acceleration, I'd say. Yeah.
So you had, I mean, nationally, you had the Beatles, the Who, the Stones, yep. and then you had this great emerging scene out of Detroit.
Yep.
And it was the beginning of what we later became great American rock bands.
And there were a lot of them.
And then Grand Funk came on the scene.
Grand Funk. I'll tell you a good story about Grand Funk.
From Flint, Michigan.
We go to one of these shows. Okay, after the Grandy Ballroom was kind of fading, it wound down, and another place opened up called the East Town. And it was an old movie theater. Okay, the place I saw Tull and Chicago at.
Nice.
We went to see an opening act. This is now 71. We go to see the opening act. The headliner is Fleetwood Mac, but there's no girls in the band. It's all guys. It's a blue. They're still playing blues.
No kidding.
We went to see the opening act. They had two records out, but only one of them was released in the States. The other one was only available on an import. But we knew a guy at the record store, and he got us the import.
Wow.
The album was called Paranoid, and the first one was just called Black Sabbath. So it's 1971, and we're seeing Black Sabbath first tour through America and the whole bit. And
was that tough to take? Because Black Sabbath was over the top.
They were fabulous.
I mean, they were evil.
They were great.
I mean, it was satanic at the
time.
No, but I mean, you know, the perception was, these guys are dark.
They had a song on the second record. My mom used to get so angry with me when I'd play it. It was called Electric Funeral.
Yeah.
And
oh, my God.
That didn't go over well in
no.
the house.
I used to have to hide my Ozzy albums. If you ever saw the cover of Blizzard of Oz or Diary of a Madman.
I know them all well.
He was on the verge of calling it quits. I mean, he had a very dark time after, you know, around 1980.
Okay.
He was done with Black Sabbath. And it was, you know, Black Sabbath then hired, I believe, Ronnie James Dio at the time. They had the Heaven and Hell album and stuff like that. See, that's where I know the late 70s.
Well, and we all...
Early
high school,
80s.
Right?
And, yeah, I was... Well, I was still miss the 70s, Gary, because I was born in 70.
But this is when you are in the prime and all your friends are listening to the same thing.
Oh, yeah,
and everybody sees eye to eye, and it's perfect. So anyway, wait. We're in between Black Sabbath and Fleetwood Mac. They'd run. Okay, you go to a concert now, and a set change might take a half an hour.
Yeah.
You go to one back then. The roadies were also stoned that a half an hour in today's world was like an hour and a half.
It took a long time.
It took a real long time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And it wasn't very...
And why, was drinking part of the culture as
no,
well?
No, they were all so smoked out behind the stage. Oh, they were
stoned. And it was kind of low-quality marijuana. I mean, you didn't know it at the time.
No, it was nothing like today. No, you're not getting pharmaceutical grade.
It was the seeds and stems.
Oh,
and
And if you got Mexican...
The album, they would clean the...
Open up the gatefold record and look right in the bend, and there was all kinds of goodies in there.
The wall for Frampton Comes Alive.
Every one of them.
Right.
Yep. So they ran a film of Grand Funk, and it was every bit as powerful as what was going on stage on either of the two acts, right? Because Grand Funk was about to play Cobo Hall.
Wow.
You couldn't get a ticket for that show.
Now, this is after the Olympia. They made Cobo Hall, or was it?
No, they were two venues that were both open at the same time.
Two separate? What would they use primarily Cobo Hall for? What, convention center?
It was.
Auto show?
Yep. But there was also the concert venue. It sat 12,000 people.
And keep in mind, this is the heyday of the automotive industry. So everybody had money.
We were doing okay.
People were doing well. Everybody had a connection to the car industry.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
my dad worked at Ford. A perfect example.
Flint was the epicenter of it. Now
GM.
It's the biggest joke of, you know, not joke, but
well,
you know what I mean?
They took a beating.
They're you know, not only did the car manufacturers move out of Flint, and then, of course, the recent water crisis. I mean, how much can a town really take? They've been labeled the murder capital.
Oh, they just took it on the chin. But here, to get back to Grand Funk, I'll tell you the thing that launched them the most, and this is the thing that blew everybody away. I didn't get to go to this one, so I'm going to start with that. I was actually here. We had a place at a cottage up here, and it was October 69. Zeppelin was playing Olympia.
Wow.
They had graduated from the Granny Ballroom up to Olympia. Olympia was about 15,000. It's where the Red Wings played.
Still on their first or second album.
Number two had just come out.
The first came out in 68 or 67.
Nope, early 69, like January. Barely.
Which had Communication Breakdown, yeah. Good Times, Bad Times.
Yeah, barely.
It was a real blues album.
They were a blues band.
Yep.
They were. All four of the guys, there's such a long story around
again,
that.
Again, Jimmy Page influenced by the blues, the American blues.
Big time.
And then, you know, the British Wave brought it back over with the Yardbirds at the time.
Yep.
And he was highly influenced by the blues. I mean, Led Zeppelin is a blues band.
They in the very
just
beginning.
Just like the Rolling Stones.
And if you listen to some of the later stuff like T for One and some of these other things, they are a blues band. They were, and a darn good one at that. Okay, so.
And a super group, essentially.
Yeah,
because what most John people Paul don't... Jones and John Bonham and everybody was in another popular English band.
And here's
like
the thing:
the Yardbirds and Robert Plant. I don't know. I can't remember.
He came from some local band in England called Band of Joy, and they were good.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know a lot about them. But here's the funny thing: Zeppelin's playing Led Zeppelin II, which everybody couldn't wait for that record to come out.
Oh, yeah.
And Whole Lot of Love and all the other stuff is on it, and we're just blown away.
The Lemon Song.
Grand Funk was the opening act to that at Olympia, okay? From what everybody said, Grand Funk blew Zeppelin off the stage that
night. Wow. Wow.
And Peter Grant,
I heard that.
Zeppelin's
I heard
manager,
that.
Had the plug pulled on Grand Funk because he was getting ticked off that they were going to blow his band off stage.
I think Mark Farner told me that he had a Mr. Grant.
He was right.
He was he did that often.
Uh-huh.
I think he may have done it with Hendrix at some point. You know, that's you know, but what a genius. I mean, he had Led Zeppelin. I hear that. In the days of Led Zeppelin, especially the early few tours, is that you know, he wouldn't allow a lot of photography. He wouldn't
none.
There was a mystique about bands.
No interviews.
That is lost these days. No interviews.
No
right?
press.
No
none.
Press. Nothing.
Mm-mm.
And there's only one person these days, because everybody now, you know, you got to have a Twitter, you got to have a Facebook, overexposed. Yeah.
Oh,
everybody's
sure.
overexposed, but you sort of need that. And there's only one comedian that goes against the grain. He doesn't do Jimmy Fallon. It's Tosh. This guy, Tosh. Tosh.0 or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like a throwback of this original mystique. He doesn't do interviews. He doesn't do national nothing.
He made it work.
And that's pretty
created,
cool.
He created a mystique.
Yep.
And sometimes less really is more.
Absolutely.
But
the only thing you knew about a band is what was on the album,
mm-hmm.
what was on the back of the album, what was in the liner notes, and what would get written up in Rolling Stone magazine.
And if there were no pictures, you didn't even know what they looked like. Pink Floyd was notorious up until, oh boy, The Wall?
Are you talking Pink Floyd, right.
Nobody even knew who the four guys in the band were to see what they looked like because they did nothing like that.
That was back in the Sid Barrett days.
Yep. In the very beginning, even all the way up through Dark Side of the Moon. Look at the liner notes to see pictures of the band. There aren't any.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of hits before 75, 76, 77. And they were doing that thing. They were psychedelic rock, early 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so after Grand Funk, do they play the circuit around Detroit a long time?
Well, but no, it seems they played like nationally.
They were headlining. They sold out Shea Stadium in 1971 faster than the Beatles.
And the Felt Forum in Los Angeles and some of these other really big venues from back then. I never hear about the Felt Forum anymore, so for all I know, it's been bulldozed down. But big place back then.
Could that have been the L.A. Forum?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Or Felt Forum. Maybe that was New York.
Now it's the Staples Center.
Yeah. Now, yeah. And you have the Barclays Center in
but they still have the Hollywood Bowl.
There you go.
The Beatles played the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah. So.
And where's the Beatles at this time? Because
retired.
Now they're a psychedelic.
They're done.
After Sgt. Pepper's, Sgt. Pepper's was a
game changer.
68,
69, June 1st, 67.
When they made the transition from "I Want to Hold Your Hand" to now it's "Helter Skelter."
We're not playing live anymore at all. We're done. We're a studio band.
And their sets were like 25 minutes long, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. That was it.
So they would play Olympia. They'd go in there and play a 25-minute set
twice.
What?
Twice.
Would they do two shows
or would they
play the same song?
Two shows.
Okay, a 7 o'clock and a 10 o'clock.
In 1964 and 5, they're raking in like $550, which was a lot of money in that period of time. Doesn't sound like it now. You think about that, and it's not even like lunch at McDonald's or Burger King. But back in 65, $550 was a lot.
And a lot of bands were getting ripped off by their promoters their managers at the time because, you know, you take a guy out of the garage and then all of a sudden you got this music business and everybody's paying $350 a ticket and you've got 10,000 people. And probably back then it was 7,000, 6,000 in these.
Yeah.
Like Olympia was probably 6,000.
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers were. But
the numbers wouldn't add up.
Got clipped. These bands, and they still made money. That was the thing. They still made money. I read recently.
But they were also spending it.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
You're 20.
Mark Farner was telling me about the bad deals, you know, that they got. But he did make an insurance investment, which was buying a farm. And Jimmy Buffett did the same thing. His first big check, he bought a boat that he could actually live on. He goes, so if all else fails, I got a place to live and I can move around.
Neil Young bought a ranch.
And that's what Mark Farner did. He bought a farm. He's like, I could always grow my own food. I could always, the only thing I got to worry about is the property taxes.
There was a band out of Flint called Terry Knight and the Pack.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old Yardbirds tune called Mister, You're a Better Man Than I. And it was covered by Terry Knight and the Pack. The Pack, I think, had two of the three guys that would wind up in Grand Funk. So
no
Grand
kidding.
Funk gets started, and who's
and
the
Grand
manager
Funk
of Grand
three,
Funk?
Three-piece. It was Mel Don Brewer and Mel and Mark Farner.
And Mark Farner, right? And later, they added a keyboard guy named Craig Frost. I got a chance to talk to Craig Frost. This is a whole other story.
No kidding.
I was coming back from... first time I went to Europe... I'm flying back from Germany. It's like 1975. The plane's half empty. And who do my girlfriend and I sit next to? Craig Frost. He tells us all sorts of Grand Funk stories that they did on the tour.
Was he engaging? Was he?
He was fun. He was a likable guy.
And I bet to run into a guy like you who really was there and really, I mean, Gary, you have a great recollection of
this. I love this stuff. I live for it and always did.
And so, and let it be known that Gary, when he's, when he recently retired, congratulations.
Yeah, 2 weeks
But
now.
You bought yourself some awesome headphones. What kind of system do you have? Do you listen to vinyl?
No.
Right. Talk about that.
Okay.
Talk about your setup at home, and how many songs do you have?
20,000.
20,000. I thought I had a lot. I have like 4,000 or 5,000.
I've got 20. And my 20, what's funny about it, you get an iPod, and it's 160 gig. I've only got a few gig left, because my 20 includes songs mostly that are like 15 and 20 minutes long. More gigs.
And what kind of headphones do you like?
Okay. I have two sets. They're both from a company called Sennheiser. One is
Sennheiser.
Yeah,
Sennheiser. How much did those cost, dude? if you don't mind me asking.
No, retail or what I paid?
Retail.
$1,600 a pair.
No kidding.
Yeah. Now I bought them. I buy them on the
Waves. Are you listening to Wave or are you listening to MP3? Because
I'm listening.
MP3 is a little compressed.
It is, but here's the way around that. You take your USB port out of your computer. You feed it into a tube headphone amplifier with a spare tube power supply.
You're kidding.
It's called a Woo, W-O-O audio.
I'm going to have to go back and listen
Fireflies.
To this.
Fireflies. They're called Fireflies. And they've got a DAC, a digital audio. A DAC. Anyway, it upsamples your sampling rate. And you listen to it through these really hot headphones. The power supply in the amp is about another $1,600 rig.
You're kidding me.
No, that's just when I'm sitting at home in front of my computer and I don't want to irritate my wife with loud music.
Right, right, right. So I've seen some posts that you made on Facebook. And it's about the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, it's a cube. It's just a little cube. The thing is cool.
And you have that with your MP3 player. You have your
with the cube,
the iPod or whatever it is.
Now, iPod.
Now do you use your phone?
No, I don't use the phone at all. But on the iPod, I have a called a FIO, F-I-I-O, portable amplifier. It's strapped together with this little thing like a heavy-duty rubber band.
I saw that thing. You got like
and another pair of Sennheiser earbuds. They're called IE8s, and they're like pretty close to the top of the line. These things retail at $450, but I bought them online. I think I paid $140 for them.
And what are you listening to these days? Not that I'm asking you what current music you listen to, but are you still in that era that you still listen to like pretty much exclusively late 60s and early 70s
rock?
Yeah,
but there's some other stuff that, okay.
You like Kate Bush.
I love Kate Bush.
You went to Europe to see her.
Yes.
And that's pretty intense.
I flew out Sunday and flew back Thursday.
Wow.
Saw her twice in between. It was good.
Wow.
It was a life changer. Okay, to answer the current thing, you want to hear something really great and you want to hear it in earbuds. I live across the street from Grand Traverse Bay. I have just an ordinary house. You've been there.
A spectacular view over the water.
But it's just a regular house. It's 1,200 square feet. Nothing.
Small house in an awesome location.
Yes. And on my front porch in the summer, I'll sit in a crappy little Adirondack chair. It's not nothing, you know, no great shakes. In fact, one of them was plastic. It's like those ones you walk into Lowe's and you see them in the entry.
They're like
$20. Yeah, yeah. It's like $2, really. So I live a pretty ordinary life, but I come out on the front porch with that little portable headphone amplifier, that iPod, those awesome earbuds. This will be the first summer. A bourbon and a cigar.
It transports you.
Life is great.
Wherever you want to be.
So, the thing that's going to get a lot of plays this year, the Stones came out with an album called Blue and Lonesome just recently.
Yeah, yeah. You gave me a copy of it.
I know I did. It's a great record.
Yeah.
They play blues, and they play blues probably better than almost anybody else these days. That one is going to sound really good.
One time, Gary and I, Gary said, there was a Rolling Stones pay-per-view event, and you invited me to your house. We had a great time.
We had fun. Like,
you had the big projection screen and an awesome stereo surround sound system. It was tremendous.
It's fun.
And I also enjoyed the Rolling Stones when they played at a club in New York. And I think Christina Aguilera was part of this.
Yep.
It was directed by Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
Yeah, that was an awesome show as well.
I think the Beacon Theater, I want to say,
Yep. They also put one out for the Steel Wheels tour, and I saw that in the IMAX back in the
Stones at the Max.
Yep,
yep.
That was mid late '80s.
Late '80s,
and then they just had one Hyde Park where they're playing an outside venue in Europe.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. I mean, I just like a multi-camera professionally recorded.
Sure.
You know, I'm not too fussy, but it, you know.
It feels like you're there.
I can't watch YouTube cell phone camera video.
No.
I can't watch it.
No, that makes you nuts.
No.
But these other ones you're talking
professional
about?
Professional shot, professional sound. I'm in. I'm in 100%.
You and me both. Well, I've got a couple others you might want to come over for because we could do this. And now that I'm retired, I have the time.
Yeah. And you know what? I have a little bit of time too right now. Let's play another song and take another little break.
All right.
What do we got here?
What
do you
want
to play that you goes along with what we've been talking
let's
about?
Let's go on to the back end. We're up to like 1970 right now.
Yep.
There's a band called Cactus. Short version on the Cactus Band. Two of the guys from Vanilla Fudge, the drummer and the bass player.
Carmine Appice.
Yep. And Tim Bogert on bass. Get together.
And there's another Appice that doesn't pronounce the last name the same way.
It's his brother.
A piece. Right.
Yeah.
And are Vinny, they both drummers?
Vinny.
Right.
Yeah. It's
They're
his brother.
They're both drummers.
And I don't know anything about him, but Carmine was in Vanilla Fudge. Okay. So they get together with Rusty Day, who used to be the vocal for the Amboy Dukes with Ted Nugent, and Jim McCarty, a guitar player who goes all the way back to Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, but would later be in the Rockets. Okay, so there's four piece. This song's called Big Bad Mama Blues or something like that.
Yeah, Big Mama Boogie.
Big Mama Boogie.
And when we come back, I want to ask you about Ted Nugent and the perception. You know how Ted totes that he's a clean living guy that supports the military and stuff? How much validity do you think there was to him being a draft dodger?
Couldn't tell you.
I mean, not that you know for sure, but I mean, was he, I'll ask you, we'll talk a little.
Ted was always known as a wild man. Let's right. say that. He was known for a show around,
I don't buy that he was drug free in the Amboy Dukes.
I'm not sure that he was, but this one show was Halloween 69 or 70, it was promoted poorly. The guy that put it together, a guy by the name of Mike Quattro, who is another Detroit name that people might know, did this thing, and a lot of the people that were supposed to play didn't. But Ted, at one point, grabbed one of the big heavy cables that were responsible for the sound systems and swung across the stage of Olympia wearing nothing but a loincloth.
Yeah. That's
a legendary story. We heard about it Monday in high school.
Then he made that a regular part of his act.
That
all
was
the way
Ted.
Up until 1980 with the Scream Dream Tour.
And the dude
the
was a great
with
guitar
the swinging
player.
On the vine and all of that. Let's just listen to Big Mama Boogie right now on Omelet Radio with Gary.
Yay.
Let go. has my child. I keep a girl, she's got my child. Some of the things she does just make my mind go wild. I tell her back off, but sometimes she don't hear. I tell her get back, baby, sometimes she won't hear. Then she gets a little push, I make my position clear. Look out, baby. Train conductor, baby, when it comes to my life. Like an airplane pilot, darling, when it comes to my life. I kick you off my flight if you keep on giving me a jive.
Omelet Radio, and that was
Cactus.
Cactus. What's the story behind Cactus, Gary?
Cactus, four guys, the two Vanilla Fudge guys,
right?
The guitar player from the Rockets, and then the singer from the Amboy Dukes. And from what I heard recently, and I, you know, I try to be up on top of these things, and I never knew this stuff. But I guess what was supposed to happen was the two Vanilla Fudge guys were supposed to get together with Jeff Beck. Later, they did. It was called Beck, Bogart, and Appice. But from what the story went, something happened, and Beck got into a car accident. Now, if you know anything about Beck, he's a huge hot rod guy. He works on cars. In fact, some years he'll take off like 2 or 3 years in a row to work on cars.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but he's known for it. He's a gearhead.
Right.
So I guess Beck got into a car accident. Things kind of fell apart, and so the two Vanilla Fudge guys got together with these other two, and therefore Cactus came about.
Wow.
And they opened up for a show I saw, you know, one of the opening acts, and they smoked.
What about Jeff Beck? Did he play here at Interlochen a few years ago?
Oh, if he did,
will occasionally pop up. I know for sure DTE,
yeah,
he played, and it was part of a package type of thing. But
yes.
Who have you seen in recent times that you know, you would recommend, or is there anything you're looking forward to?
Yes.
At this point?
Two things.
Who do you want to see? Who do you need to see again? Because you've probably seen them all.
I've been pretty fortunate that I've seen, let's start with who I haven't seen. I didn't get to see Jimi Hendrix. I blew it on that one. And he played Detroit he played Ann Arbor once. A buddy of mine saw him. And this is even before he got popular, played a little club called the Fifth Dimension. And then he played Kobo twice. And that was, and Masonic once. So
did he play Olympia?
No. Played Kobo.
Played he didn't Kobo. Play the Grandy?
No. He was already too big for that. But he played Masonic. No, he played Masonic once, and then he played the Kobo once. So I didn't see him. I was supposed to see Janis Joplin at the Grandy, and my ride fell through. So that, you know, and it happens to all of us.
Right.
It happens to all of us.
Well, you didn't know at the time that it was such an epic opportunity.
No.
You didn't know it was he was going to die in 1970.
Kind of changed things a little bit, you know?
Hendrix died in September of 1970.
Yeah.
And I was born in August, so he and I shared
You would have missed
month,
him.
one month
on the
Earth,
planet,
Earth
right.
together.
All right, so... I've got two coming up. One I bought a ticket for day before yesterday. And now here's the only bad thing about living where we do. You got to travel.
It drives me crazy.
It drives me, yeah, me too. So I'm going to Chicago, and I've got a ticket for Ricky Gervais, which is, I love Ricky Gervais. He's funny.
The comedian?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Now, another one's going to go on.
I love supporting comedy. I'm a huge comedy fan.
Yep. I know this because I worked with a guy that you would have on in the morning. So he ran Echo.
Echo. Chris. Comedy Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He does stand up.
Matter of fact,
I had Jeff Tate come into town.
Yeah.
And Madeline Begley.
I know her very well.
She runs Echo.
Maddie.
Maddie.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
She's awesome.
Yep, I like her a lot. All right, so I got one more coming up.
You know, in closing on the comedy is that I like what's happening with comedy right now because there's it has a grassroots feel. Like if, you know, there's a certain level like Bill Burr and Louis C.K. and
Love
Chris
them.
Rock and
Love
these
them.
National guys. But in a very, like, similar to the 60s and 70s music, there's like, you know, pop-up venues.
These
and
guys had to cut their chops. In the clubs.
Right.
See, I got a big problem
in your car, sleep where you have to, stay in a cheap motel,
yeah.
Make $50,
but
you're
better.
Doing your craft, right.
And improving.
And I have all the respect in the world for somebody that does that. If you believe in yourself where you are going to live in next to squalor
yep.
and town to town, you don't know what's happening next. I love that adventure.
All right.
That
I'm going to ask you the worst question I'm going to ask you. How old are you?
46.
You need to be my age, 16 years older.
I know.
Because here's the thing.
I'm way
beyond. What you just said is how all of our bands, the people that you love,
right.
and the people that I love and was fortunate enough to see, they all did. It used to be a thing when a band would go on tour in the late 60s, it was guaranteed that they would lose money the first three tours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That yeah. means you're playing, you're getting the worst hotels. You know, they're not whining and dining you like they do now.
Back in the day, it was Holiday Inns was like kind of a big deal. Like
oh.
Holiday Inn was living large.
You were living large. Yeah. You're getting the Thunderbird Motel with the hourly rates and the porno TV. Only they wouldn't even give you the porno TV because it would cost money. No, but all right.
But they were banking on the fact that they were passionate about what they were doing. And they
would
were
get
investing
better.
In themselves.
Yeah.
Do you know Van Halen after their first tour, and I think they opened up for Black Sabbath and Kiss and stuff, they sold, I think, 7 million albums, you know, at the start, while their tour was going on, they were an opening act.
Sure.
And they, David Lee Roth said they got back home after the tour, and they were on the 2 year tour, and they got back and they were $2 million in debt.
Incredible. Well, here's a good story.
With the record company, because they would advance you money and the sales would work against that loan, which is essentially a loan.
I read in Rolling Stone 25, 30 years ago, the guys in Guns N' Roses said that they used to have girls in the clubs when they'd play that would want to sleep with them. And they would do it just so they'd have a place to sleep at night.
Right.
They didn't even care about, you know, any of the other goodies that came along with it. They just wanted a bed.
I know a band that probably makes you cringe, but Poison did that. Yeah, like the drummer said that they would, you know, hook up with fat chicks because they're like, hey, if it meant a place to sleep and a meal, you know, before you got on your way the next day,
they were all in.
They would do it.
They were in.
Like their form of prostitution, which, you know, if you're willing to go through that,
that's commitment.
I respect that.
I do too.
On every level, because, you know, and on a much lesser extreme is my journey in radio. You know, I've had to live in my friend's basement at 35 years old.
Yeah.
And not knowing when my next radio job was coming. That was right before here. And, you know, the passion is still there. Like, yeah. I'm choosing a different route that other people.
I hope you keep doing this one, though. Oh. At least for fun.
Oh, absolutely.
For no other reason than fun.
I built a website. I know how to run it. I've learned about the media hosting. And, you know, it's a learning curve that I didn't anticipate. Because there's a lot of radio personalities that just know how to put headphones on and go on the air. But you need to do more than that these days.
There is the business side.
You know,
after this, I got somebody you need to talk to for a sponsor.
The talent.
I've got one for you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Great. Well, Gary, it's been a great conversation. Let's play another song. We're just hanging at the house. It's very snowy northern Michigan afternoon, and I'm just enjoying the crap out of this. Let's play another tune for the people. This is an extended podcast. I knew it was going to be. Do you want to play rock and roll or
19... You know what? I guess the whole thing is centered around the later 60s, so play 1969. So there's this little wiry dude, and he's at Henry Ford Community College. You don't know who he is. He's brand spanking new, but, you know, I'm 14 or something like that. And I turn to my friend. I'm like, who is that guy? And he goes, his name's Iggy Stooge, and this is a band called the Psychedelic Stooges.
Let's do it. Here on Omelet Radio, hanging out with my good friend Gary on a snowy northern Michigan afternoon. Well,
it's 1969, okay. Walk across the USA. It's another year for me and you. Another year with nothing to do. It's another year for me and you. Another year with nothing to do. Now last year I was 21. I didn't have a lot of fun. And now I'm gonna be 22. I say oh my and a boo-hoo. Yeah, now I'm gonna be 22. Oh my and a boo-hoo. Well, it's 1969, okay. All across the USA. It's another year for me and you. Another year with nothing to do. And it's 1969. It's 1969. It's 1969, baby. It's 1969.
The Stooges on Omelet Radio. That was an awesome song, man. 1969. I never, you know what, Gary? I got to admit, and I'm the first to admit, I have never heard that song before.
Oh, what a
and
great
it's
song.
Now one of my favorite songs.
Well, I'm
it
glad I brought it over.
1969.
Baby.
Oh, man. So when did that come out? 70, 71?
69.
Oh, it did at the time?
It was right in, it was in what we call today real time.
So what's the order of popularity for Detroit-based bands? And Gary and I were just talking off the air about we're going to do this regularly.
Yeah.
We're
going to
feature, like maybe we could do the Kinks one day.
Yep.
You know, and just like, or we could do the Stones one day. And we could just go back and play B-sides and play, you know, the best of the best. This is niche radio.
Are you
know?
Getting emails?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here's the thing I'm going to throw out. And so just so I don't do something that nobody else wants us to do. You want to hear some things you had never heard before? Just a couple of bands that you'd probably like, but just nobody ever bothered to turn you on to them.
Right.
If you want that, send Omelet an email.
I wish I knew about 1969. I'd play that on the radio. I think that would be massively.
Why would you not like that song?
I think that would everybody would like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? You know, there was always that pressure to be on commercial radio where you wanted to please the masses. And I feel much less pressured to do that on the podcast, which has allowed me to delve deep.
Yep.
Where, you know, listen, if you're not into it, listen to the next episode.
Yeah.
I can't help you. But, you know, on the radio, you felt this obligation to the company, to the program director, to the general manager, to the sales staff, to the engineer.
A lot of people
are relying on that expected content, and I don't feel that at all here. Not that I favor one or the other, but it's nice and refreshing to dive deep.
Let's try a different point of view. When I cut my teeth on radio, I'm 14, 15 years old. Two things happen. Number one, I developed a philosophy that not then, because I was just a kid, but I have it now. When radio really does what it's supposed to do well, it does two things. It educates and it entertains the listener. When I say educates, it turns you on to stuff.
Right.
Okay? I heard more brand new people that I would wind up liking for 40 or 50 years.
Right.
Thanks to my friends, the DJs, on the radio.
I got something I'm going to turn you on to. And 9 times out of 10, it would be something that you would like.
Dave Dixon, who I alluded to earlier, the first time I ever heard Santana, I'm sitting at this crappy little desk in my bedroom doing my homework. It's fall 1969. And they have one record that just came out. It's the one with all the different faces. Like, it looks like a lion. It's the first Santana album. And he goes, I really don't like this band. That's how ornery and curmudgeonly Dave Dixon was.
Wow.
He goes, and I don't like this band. It's not doing anything for me, but I'm going to play a song off it anyway. And it's called You Just Don't Care. And quite candidly, I just don't care. I remember this because it was one of those moments where as a teenager.
Innovative at the time.
Yeah, you're hearing this stuff and you're thinking to yourself, wow. And he plays You Just Don't Care off the first Santana album.
He's a rebel.
I got that record for Christmas that year.
I want my DJs to be rebels.
Oh, darn right. Yeah. Here's the thing. Everybody likes to get a little bit dangerous, and rock and roll is dangerous. It always was, and if it's done right, it always should be. Well, it should. So here's the thing.
But Gary,
you don't have to go knock off a store or anything, but there's a lot of other ways to have a little bit of fun, not hurt anybody, and still feel like you were a bad boy or girl. And that's the whole thing with what rock and roll was meant to be from the get-go.
Right.
And it still is.
And it should be that way from the musicians to the DJs to the way that you're presented with this this music. And, you know, that's basically, you know, I've been more personality based because that's on
me. That's who you are.
I can provide entertainment based on what I say.
That's your
forte.
But I
have no control of the bands and the music that I play. So it's kind of a cross, like, I really, you know, I don't want to hear Free Fallin' by Tom Petty ever again.
No, you heard it enough.
Like, give me, like, I've heard it 50,000 times. I've heard it. I don't need to hear it again. But if I haven't heard Listen to Her Heart, or if I haven't heard the Apartment song in a long time, let's put that on.
How about The Last DJ?
The Last DJ.
Who plays what he wants to play, who says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey.
You know what? That song spoke to me in ways that you could only imagine. I mean, every single word, every single, and that's a salute to what we wake up to every day and what we want to put on there, you know?
It's your craft, and you're damn good at it.
Thank you so much, Gary. Listen, I'm going to have you back. Thanks for tuning in to another podcast of OmeletRadio.com, and we'll be back later this week with another episode, and Gary is definitely going to be a regular. I knew this was going to be a home run. I know that people loved it and enjoyed it.
I hope so.
And let's start with, let's end with The Last DJ by Tom Petty right there.
Great choice.
Gary, thanks for being with me,
My
man.
My pleasure.
You were meant for this format, and we could do anything we want, and let's continue that right now. All right. Thanks for tuning into another podcast, and let's roll some Tom Petty in the spirit in which this song is played and intended.
There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice, there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice, and there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. Sometimes it will kind of come in, and I'll bust a move and remember how it was back then. And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say.